and the vice chair of the school readiness board. Our chair, Jim Sorensen, is excused today, so I will be chairing the meeting on Monday, March 2nd. There are some people online who will be joining, and I think they can participate through the speakerphone, correct? Okay. Well, before we get started, we'll just go around the table for everyone to introduce themselves and introduce our new members who are here today for the School Readiness Board, one of whom just walked in, I think. Yeah, go ahead. So, Tracy Gruber, Workforce Services.
New to Phillips, Workforce Services. I help staff the board.
Yeah, Jeremiah Solari, Workforce Services.
Jamie Bitten, Progressive Preschool. Debbie Hansen, Salt Lake Community College.
Amy Aaron Churchy, United Way of Salt Lake.
And Columbus University of Utah.
Steve Crandall from Charter Schools.
Emma Monge, Department of Workforce Services, Program Specialist.
Montana Myers, Workforce Services.
Thank you for introductions, and Dr. Son and Amy, we'd like to welcome you as members, new members to the School Readiness Board. And just a couple, you want to just take a minute and explain a little bit more about your role and involvement in the School Readiness Initiative?
Yeah, absolutely. So I can start, Amy. I'm with United Way of Salt Lake. Like I said, we are an education-focused backbone organization working on education, specifically early childhood education. And so I'm an interim member right now, taking the place of somebody else on our team who had been on the board. So I'm really happy to be here.
And the United Way has one of the set-aside positions on the board for a nonprofit. And Dr. Son, welcome.
Thank you. Well, I've been researching child school readiness development for at-risk children and working in education evaluation. So I hope that my teachers could help and support for the community.
Well, welcome. Dr. Son is the appointee from the Speaker of the House. And we just did quick introductions. Jennifer, if you just want to announce your name.
Sure. Jennifer Threlston.
Thank you. The next item on the agenda, we do have a full agenda today, just so you all know, and there are some votes that we need to make, but the PowerPoint that's been put together is going to walk everybody through, and we have it set up so that there's enough explanation before votes are made and an opportunity for questions by the board. The next item on the agenda is approval of the minutes from the October 10th meeting. I am assuming you've all had a chance to review them and will entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
I make a motion to approve the
minutes.
Okay. Any comments, questions? With a motion on a second, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And the minutes from October 10th, 2019 are approved. The next item on the agenda is a report from the research subcommittee. You may recall that I think almost a year ago, the board established a subcommittee to start talking about research and recommendations for the board to consider regarding quality observation tool and student performance outcomes. And that research subcommittee that was pulled together by the board has been meeting for the past several months, and they are here to give an update. And we'll start with Nuna, who's going to provide some background, and then John Collins from the State Board of Education will present us with some slides and some recommendations.
Thank you. So before John talks you through the details of the recommendations today, I wanted to do just a couple of slides to refresh everyone's memory on what the recommendations that you're hearing today are and why they're important for our grant. And I will say, I'm just speaking on behalf of the entire team. If you guys don't mind raising your hands, there you go. It's a big team of people, so I'm just going to give a quick overview on behalf of all of us. So in 2019, the state legislature passed Senate Bill 166, which streamlined the School Readiness Initiative and established the two grants that we talk about now, the Common Quality and the Expanded Student Access Grants. This is really intended to be a way for programs in becoming quality to develop their quality program, and then those are, that are determined quality as determined by the quality tool and the student performance measures. We want to expand their reach to serve more economically disadvantaged and English learner students. So these are two competitive grant grants that are administered through the Department of Workforce Services, and we use our established department-wide application and contracts process to administer these. So in expanded access, the reason that John is going to be putting forth recommendations from the subcommittee is because this board, as part of their expanded role in Senate Bill 166, is now tasked with establishing the quality tool and establishing the performance metrics, which determine which programs receive funding through the expanded student access grant. So in expanded access, it's a two-phase process, the first phase of which was actually released on Friday, so just a few days ago. So programs must meet the quality expectations for quality to be invited back to apply for the second phase. And so that first phase is really to determine whether or not they're established at quality using the quality tool and the threshold that you all set and that you'll have a recommendation to set today for the upcoming program year. Programs that meet that quality expectation are invited to apply for the full application, which includes speaking to the entire list of quality elements, which I'll show in a moment, as well as speaking to whether or not the students that are in their programs go on to have high performance in the assessments that you'll also be hearing about today later on when Jennifer presents about the PEEP and the KEEP. So given that, on the screen, sometimes it goes to sleep. So this is the list of elements of quality. So a number of years ago, it was determined that the Eckers 3 would be put in place as a way to establish kind of a standardized way to address or assess quality in programs to determine if they are eligible to receive funding. And so that is one of the ways that we look at whether programs are quality. But when they're invited back to submit a full application, they really have to detail how their program hits quality in all of these areas. And they're assessed using our scoring rubric in a competitive scoring process. And then for programs that are funded to get to high quality, this is really used as a way for our specialists to go out and help assess whether or not the programs are meeting these quality elements, and it's used as a teaching and training tool for professional development and in all of these other aspects to help them get to that high quality level that we would want to see after time spent on the grant. And the last slide before I hand it over to John, so just as again as a refresher, code requires the school readiness board to establish the quality tool as well as how it will be implemented and the benchmarks for what is considered student performance. And as Tracy mentioned, a little over a year ago, a quality tool work group met and started the conversation to determine whether or not the Eckers 3 continues to be the appropriate tool or whether or not another tool needed to be considered, and what some of the capacity and bandwidth and other considerations are, which John will talk a little bit about today before you hear the recommendations. And that work group also recommended that this research subcommittee continue to have that conversation, and so you'll hear more about the research plan and their ongoing work. And so we expect over the years, not only will that research subcommittee report out on these quality tools and student performance outcome measures, but help us to establish a research agenda for this project moving forward to be able to answer the questions that we all have and that the board has around these grants. So with that, I'll turn it over to John.
Before John comes up, any questions by way of background that Nuna presented?
Have there been, besides the Eckers 3, have there been others that the name of something that we're familiar with has been thrown out?
Yes, like, and you'll hear the details about it from John, but it's the CLASS tool, CLASS is the acronym for it, and that's the other tool that's being considered. Those are the two primary tools that we're looking at.
And nothing else?
Nothing else, but not to say that there isn't one out there, but there are sort of a criteria that we want to use. It's about, you know, is there an evidence base for using that tool in the field? Is there a way to assess whether or not programs that are quality using that tool have better student outcomes? So it's really intended to be evidence and research-based in that regard. So if there are other tools that might not be part of the conversation that you all think we should look at, we should definitely hear about it
as we go through today. Those are probably the most prevalent.
Absolutely.
But there's a school of body that uses one and a school of body that uses the other in
right.
general.
Okay. Other questions?
You sure this was a year ago?
It does feel a little bit like yeah. Groundhog Day. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Okay. Time flies when you're having fun.
I guess that's what it is.
Okay, John, thank you.
Okay, so yeah, I'm John Collins. I'm a research consultant at the Utah State Board of Education, and I was tasked with kind of heading up this research subcommittee. So we've kind of hit on this a couple of times. Okay, so yeah, in April 2019, there was a quality tool work group, which as part of its kind of ending its task, it recommended the creation of a research subcommittee as further assess the appropriate quality tools and develop a school readiness research plan. So that was this group, this research committee. And the tasks were basically to develop the school readiness initiative research plan, assess the appropriate quality tools, and develop a recommendation for the school readiness board, which is you, and develop a recommendation on students' performance outcome threshold to establish for the 2020-2021 school year in the expanded student access grant. So we shared a bit about our research plan back in, I believe it was October. So we talked about that a little bit. It was, I don't know if it was formally approved, but it was more of an information item back in the fall. So that is part of our recommendations that you'll see in your slide deck. So briefly, Jim Sorensen had asked me to kind of touch on, so part of this discussion is, you know, our expectation is that a school that we say is high quality is producing students with higher outcomes. That's sort of intuitively what you're thinking is happening. So he wanted me to kind of speak to the degree that these tools that we're using are tied to student outcomes and kind of the wider literature. So I'm just going to kind of briefly skim over these. A lot of this was put together by my associate Jimmy, so Jimmy Hernandez back there, so he may speak up too if there are follow-up questions to this. So just briefly, I'm going to go over, you know, what is a quality tool, their creation, purpose, and some of the research on them. So that's a little off the screen, but basically in the early 1990s, states began to develop what was called a quality rating and improvement system. So they were sort of a intended to monitor and regulate what occurred in these early childhood settings. These observational tools were a part of this effort in the early 90s. They were developed to assign quality ratings as a method to support these programs' improvement, basically, as quality. And to your question, Jamie, the most frequently used observation tools are the environmental rating scales, which includes the Eckers, and the Classroom Assessment and Scoring System, or CLASS. So over on the side here, you can kind of see the number of QRIS systems using those observational tools as of 2016. So the, you know, kind of vast majority of them are using one of those two. Some of them develop their own. Some are using some other tools. So in the field, largely, it's these two as your main options, which isn't to say that they have to be our only options. And typically, these are part of, again, this quality rating and improvement system. It's part of sort of a network. It's one data point among a lot of other data points. These ratings, they're not usually used alone, which is sort of what Nuna hit on in our grant. We're not using it alone. We're using it as kind of one data point. And then here you can kind of see how they're using these tools. So, you know, the majority of them are using it basically like we are, for rating with a specific score target that they're trying to hit. Some of them used it just for their own edification to improve their own programs, and some of them used it for rating but didn't have any sort of a target score associated with it. Any questions regarding that? That's just their creation. Okay, great. So, and then just sort of broadly, the quality tool and program outcomes. So the Eckers has gone through multiple revisions. Currently, they're on Eckers 3. Before that, it was Eckers R. The Eckers R, and you can kind of see this. I'll read the slide to some degree. Studies have shown an association between classroom quality and growth in academic and social skills. However, the findings are mixed. And that's what we find with a lot of these. When findings are significant, the associations are really small. So that was the one that was around before the current system. So a lot of the literature is on EGRISAR. The class system, so using meta-analysis, the relationship between class and children's outcomes showed small association between, so these capitalized items, classroom organization and instructional support, are the domains of class, so they're split up into three domains. Classroom organization has been associated with executive function skills, and instructional support has been associated with social skills. However, there are really no associations found between the dimensions of class and early academic skills such as literacy, vocabulary, and math. And then with the more modern version of the Eckers 3, it's pretty recent, so there's not a lot of literature on it at the moment. No current studies exist linking Eckers 3 to child outcomes. At the beginning of the Eckers 3, they say that the new edition was designed to, quote, improve the prediction of child outcomes while maintaining the emphasis on the importance of a wide range of developmental outcomes in children. Any questions on that before I kind of just skate along? So, kind of to that last point that Eckers has, I just wanted to kind of share what these... Okay, what these tools basically claim to do. So just in from their own introduction. So this is from a document Jimmy located. All versions of the Eckers and the class are designed to measure process quality, which is referring to the proximal interactions among children, adults, and the environment that are thought to directly impact children's growth. In the introduction to the class, it says, basically highlights the point that a lot of assessment among early childhood populations is problematic because it depends on the time of day and all of these external conditions. So they say essentially they're to some degree not trying to do that to tie to the outcomes. They're determining accountability in early education classrooms, it may be better to focus on developmental inputs rather than outputs, is what the class has to say. And the Eckers in its introduction says it is designed to improve the prediction of child outcomes, again, while maintaining the importance of a wide range of developmental outcomes in children. Additional studies will be needed to document its ability to predict childhood outcomes. So basically, the tools themselves are saying we're going to have to look into this. And to some degree or another, they're not really trying to look at outcomes. They're trying to look at this network of other issues surrounding child development. So that's just sort of a brief overview. And I rattled through that, so stop me if you need to. In your slide deck, you do have references. So if you want to dig into this a bit more, we've put together some documents you can get into yourself if you just want to, you know, kind of continue to look into the question. We didn't want to bury you right now. So that kind of gets us to what we did as a local group. So basically, when we formed this subcommittee, we started meeting October-ish, September-ish, and we basically attacked it from these angles. So we reviewed the existing literature. We had conversations with certified raters, so that included raters from Head Start, UCA, groups that had done co-rating, so they'd used the class and the Eckers at the same time, as well as our own USB and DWS raters. Jessica Smith and Emma Munch have also gone out and co-rated, so we had input from them. And then we took a look at our Eckers 3 scores from previous years and KEEP outcomes. We kind of mapped them just to see if anything on a descriptive level could be seen. And then we, again, looked at the co-observation and analysis. So those were the basic ways that we came to our recommendations. Those were the tools we were using. There we go. So Jimmy put this together. So again, class has three domains: emotional support, classroom organization, and instructional support. The Eckers has five domains. And what we basically were trying to do is see if there was association between these domains. So see if there's some way that we could use these systems together or use elements of these systems and kind of cobble together our own thing, which some states have looked into. And as you can see, so the yellow is high association between the scores. As you can see, there is some association happening here. The main problem with this slide is that we were basing it on the observations of 9 programs. It's just very small. So we couldn't really draw a lot of meaningful conclusions. We could kind of start to see something, but we're kind of limited in how confident we are in what we're seeing. And then also, so this is pretty tiny, but part of that is just the way it is. So this top box shows literacy on the keep as measured against the Eckers 3 score. So on this bottom on the x-axis, you'll see their Eckers score, and then their literacy scores on the y. Same thing on the bottom box, we have our Eckers score and our numeracy score on the y-axis. And you can see there, it's hard to draw a lot of conclusions from that, even from just sort of a descriptive standpoint. They look pretty much like lines. You know, they're pretty much straight lines. And that's basically, you know, what you're seeing. So this is, you know, super zoomed in, so you can see this one's a little below 30 and this one's a little above 30. And there's a lot of muddling in the middle. Same here, there's a little below 60, a little above 60, and a lot of muddling in the middle. So basically when we try to map those to see, okay, is Eckers helping us predict these outcomes, we're not seeing a lot on our local data. So that was what we did, essentially. And before I get into the recommendation, basically, and I wrote this down because I thought of my vocabulary that I want to see this for the
progression.
Yeah.
So I see only like 14 data points in the top. Is it aggregated at the school level or something like that?
Right. So sorry,
average,
yeah.
Average key score, right?
Right. So part of this is, yeah, exactly. So these are average key scores. Sorry, thank you for asking that. Average key scores, and this is only showing kids who we had an enrollment in one of our public high-quality programs specifically, which is why you don't see a lot of those. We have, and we'll kind of touch on this later, but we have issues touching kids who are in high-quality private programs because enrollment is a function of funding. So if, you know, they're going to, I talk with Neighborhood House a lot, so if they're going to Neighborhood House, they usually don't have an enrollment with Neighborhood House because they might also be going to, I forget what district they're in, probably Granite. You know, they're also going to Granite, and Granite is claiming that kid because they're getting funding for them. So when I pulled them out, they look like a Granite kid. So I couldn't really tell you, oh, this is how this specific private program did. Now, that's going to be fixed to some degree because we're administering the PEEP this year, or the PEEP, the preschool entry exit profile this year. So part of that, when they're entering their scores, they say what school they're coming from. So I won't be relying on enrollment. I'll be relying on these teachers saying so-and-so took this test at this school, and I know that that school is a high-quality program. So we'll be able to do more with this in future years. So this is a fairly limited, again, graph in what we can do.
So is the idea that obviously the higher the Eckers score, the better the program, correct?
Right.
So there's like almost no correlation.
Right, exactly.
So is there something liminal between 4 and 5? Like, is there a specific, like, specialness to between 4 and 5? It seems like the relationship there is as if like, the other ones are more outliers and shouldn't really even be considered. Do you know that? Do you know that?
Well, so that would be their composite Eckers score, right? So we wouldn't necessarily know what they got on the subdomains just from this composite score. So...
Right. So yeah.
So maybe
in the solution space of how you could end up with 4, there's probably like a huge number of permutations of like how that would be the case. But there could be some sort of structure there that actually has something to do with 5. There's like liminally, there's something there between 4 and 5.
Yeah. Perhaps. Yeah, that's
especially
a good point.
In literature, like the from the bottom to the top, like 40 to 70, is that right? Or 40 to 80?
Yeah, 40 to a little above 70.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a pretty wide range.
Yeah.
Well,
I
heard
a lot of the literature
that's similar to
this.
It's not from our state.
Can you repeat that, Steve?
Any other research similar to this? It's not from our state. Oh.
So basically, in this outcome slide is basically the research that has been done. They did it. You know, I did it just sort of a little dummy descriptive graph just to get a look at it. Theirs was a bit more extensive, but yeah, I mean, basically. In our sources, you should see a bit of that, right? That's essentially what they were doing, is using an assessment in X environment.
But comparing Eckers and class, that's what I'm asking. Kind of like we, you did on this on a scatter plot here.
I don't think there's any use of using Eckers 3.
No.
Of the new version.
Right, exactly. Yeah,
is
not
there, I think what you're asking, Steve, is there a similar study that's showing the relationship between Eckers and class nationally?
Or anywhere.
So there was.
But it was
the
probably the Eckers R.
Oh, that was it. Yeah, that was it. It was known as the Eckers R.
Can I ask a question just on that scatter plot again?
Yeah,
so just so I'm clear, so the universe of who's on that scores are on there are all of the LEAs that are in the High Quality Expanded Student Access grant and the KEEP scores of all of their students or just their funded students?
So this would be all of their students because, again, sort of the there's a lot problematic in trying to pick out just their funded kids. So this is just basically, you know, now all of our high-quality programs are escaping me because I'm in front of people, but say Davis, you know, we said that they were high-quality, then this is all of the Davis kids, you know.
Are one of those
their problems. Average, yeah, okay. Their average KEEP literacy score.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, and this is problematic. This is part of why we kind of want to keep the party going as far as the research subcommittee goes because, yeah, there's a lot of this kind of like what Jeremiah and Tracy are calling out that we'd like to dig into more. Anything else on that?
Any disaggregation by SES or are the kids from Davis preschool, are they low-income only?
Yeah, so we have... We typically, in a KEEP report, do disaggregate that. In this, I don't believe I did disaggregate that. I'm trying to remember my process.
Because all the kids have to be low income.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say.
Yeah, that might have been.
That's what I was trying to say. It depends on the broad scope of the data report.
Right.
Some LEAs are like, who's deducting the pay for it?
How much are they going to pay for it?
So
that's wrong. In terms of quality aspect.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, we do, and there is some documentation out there. I can get that out through Nuno or Jennifer. I've created some stuff mapping high quality with KEEP where I do disaggregate. So we can help get that out to you guys just so you can see what we have.
But there does seem to be some sort of relationship between, even though it's not statistically, reliable, between a higher score on the Eckers and higher proficiency rates. Can you say that, or you can't even?
I mean, it's within it. In the sense that, you know, if there's one is a little below and one is a little over, but with all of this kind of bundling happening, I'm not sure you could say that with me. Degree of confidence. Yeah.
Do you think once you get more information on the piece that you might have a better...
Right, absolutely. So, I mean, part of... Right, so just to, I guess, give you a preview. So part of our recommendation is... So we've been looking at these programs' pre-mid and post-assessments. What we'd like to do is continue to look at that and map that onto the KEEP entry as another data point. That still won't be very meaningful until we do have that PEEP, because then we can see, okay, so PEEP exit is the same test as KEEP entry, so we can see, okay, these kids left this program strong and they stayed strong over the summer, and that'll be meaningful. So exactly, we'll be able to do much more with the PEEP and see how these programs are moving kids through the year. Yeah.
Other questions before he moves on to the recommendations?
Okay. So, and again, I scripted this for myself because I decided how I wanted to say it. So, forgive me. I'm gonna read a little. So, basically, after looking at the literature and gathering our local data, what we could in our time frame that our group was operating, we arrived basically at the recommendation that we did not want to burden the field with a large change in our rating system until we had a compelling reason to do so. At this moment in time, we didn't feel that we had a compelling reason to do so, but there was enough interest in the class and our new abilities with our assessments and the potential of using these systems together, we would like to keep looking at it. But there may be compelling reason to do so if we can keep looking at these questions. So that said, DWS and USBE have planned to do co-rating, so have an Eckers-trained person and a class-trained person with an additional 30 programs to basically do that mapping more thoroughly that we did earlier to see how they're matching up. And we also plan to, again, I just sort of mentioned, use the KEEP scores, add in the PEEP scores to look at how these students are doing from an outcome level in the coming year, allowing us to have sort of a meaningful starting point from which to measure these programs. So a lot of these recommendations look a lot like what was recommended before this committee happened, basically because we feel like we've done a lot of good work in 6 months, but we've still only scratched the surface of what we'd like to do prior to doing a major sea change.
Is that mostly because we need more data, you think?
Yeah.
Pretty much.
It's basically just a function of we need more information. Yeah.
Well, and I think the other thing is that, I mean, the evidence for either tool is not very great, right?
Sure.
I mean, the truth of the matter is a classroom quality assessment, there is no classroom quality assessment that has high correlations with child outcome. And so I think whether or not Eckers 3 or class is the best tool is still an open question given our purposes. So we weren't really able to make a determination, but I think from a practical standpoint, there wasn't capacity at this point to really make that switch and be able to assess as many programs as we would like that would make a meaningful difference. So it didn't make sense to have a disruption for this year, one, until we dug into this a little bit more and until there was capacity to do so. So I think that's kind of the bottom line. I think we can do more research. We can find more about the overlap between Eckers 3 and class. I think we'll have some good data with the PEEP and the KEEP. And USB is doing a nice side-by-side comparison.
So kind of what we're saying is what we see now is it tells us something, but it doesn't tell us everything.
Yes.
Everything that we wanted, I'm sorry. It tells everything.
Yeah, and then there's a question of whether or not is the classroom quality tool is the classroom quality tool what we should be using to measure quality.
So you
and that's the other.
Right. Is the PEEP being collected only from LEA still?
No, the PEEP is being administered at all becoming an expansion high quality preschools. So we'll be able to get
nine programs.
No, more than nine.
That's how many is it?
I think it's 20.
And you
can make the private and public.
And in your...
Emma, can you please tell us how many public programs and private programs are going to be administering the PEEP this year?
Yep, so we have two private in becoming high quality and two public in becoming high quality. And then for expanded student access grants, for LEAs, we have,
there's 18 expanded student access, 13 of those are LEAs and 5 of them are private.
Thank you.
And in your slightly expanded local politics news, there is something moving through that would essentially open up the preschool entry exit profile to a much wider array of preschools. So there's also the potential that we're going to kind of turn on the fire hose. And we'll get a lot of data from a lot of different preschools very soon. So that also is kind of an exciting opportunity for us.
Other questions?
Okay.
Is that recommendation one?
Yes. Yeah, so I don't know if we have any other questions. I don't know how you want to proceed. I'm happy to...
So I kind of, at the discretion of the chair, I kind of see recommendation one being split up into two motions for us to decide. The first one has to do with the tool that we select for the upcoming grant cycle for the upcoming school year, and the recommendation of the research committee is that we stick with the Eckers 3. Is that correct?
Right.
So that would be the first motion for us regarding recommendation one. And we didn't get into the baseline scores yet. So if we would, I would entertain a motion that this board stick with the Eckers 3 for the upcoming school year.
What's the second part of the motion? I mean, just the second motion? Can we just put it together?
Yeah, I mean, that was, it just felt like they were two. One is the tool that we use, and then one's the baseline measure. We can do it in one.
I love complicated motions.
Okay. Okay, well then, why don't you talk about the minimum scores, and then we can go back to doing the motions.
Okay, so yeah, so absolutely. So you'll see the language in this is we're recommending that we use this for the 2020-21 program year and subsequent program years pending your approval of another tool. So we'd like to keep looking into it, and we'd like to maybe bring this before you again after we do more research. The minimum actor score as follows: to be eligible for the expanded student access grant funds for the coming program year pending your approval of another tool. These minimum scores are the scores that were approved for the previous program year. So we just stuck with what we were already doing. USBE recommends the minimum overall score of 3 for LEAs, and OCC recommends requiring a minimum overall score of 3.67 with a score of 4 on the language and literacy and the interaction subscales for private providers.
That's existing, you said?
Yeah, so this is what we've been using in the current grant year. And I don't know if anyone on my group wants to speak to that.
Amy, did you have a question?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, it wasn't on the score, minimum score. I was thinking about the motion to approve for the next program year and then subsequent program years pending the school readiness board approval of another tool, that language. Is there a scenario in which we might not use a classroom observation tool for programs that have met a certain threshold for a certain number of years? I'm wondering if we want to expand the language a little bit. Like, I could see where we would need to use a classroom observation tool for programs that are just getting into the grant, into the,
what's the first one called?
The expanded quality. And then maybe their first year in the expanded quality. But after that, we would have the ability to track program, like, actual outcomes into kindergarten. And then maybe thinking of the administrative burden that I know that classroom observation tools put on USB and DWS staff, perhaps we could drop it. So maybe my suggestion is to change the language in the motion a little bit here in the recommendations to give us more flexibility.
Can I speak to that? Okay. I would just hesitate to do that right now where we don't know what the tool is. I would like to have the vision of like a tool and we feel confident about how we're using that tool and then get to that point of like, okay, now that we're comfortable with the data that we're getting from this tool, then we can kind of go away. But until we are confident in what we're using, I hesitate to do that.
And I think I'm not disagreeing with you. I think I'm saying for the next year, let's go on with the Eckers 3, yes, but just change the language so we don't box ourselves into another tool specifically. It could be that we don't use a classroom observation tool we use.
I think the legislation requires us to have an observation tool.
Classroom.
That doesn't necessarily mean that you wouldn't set up some kind of risk structure that if you have 5 observations and they're all at 5s, maybe you only do an observation every 3 years or something like that. But in terms of having a quality tool, and my understanding is that it's in the legislation and it's required.
The concern that I have with not having a quality tool or some type of observation each year is that it helps the providers go in to have a snapshot of a classroom. It helps us to know that actually classrooms are actually set up and they're existing, which is a requirement in the grant. And it also, because of the reality that we live in with early childhood of there being high teacher turnover, having a teacher leave mid-year or end of year and only staying for a year or 2 years, bringing in a brand new teacher can completely change the environment of the classroom and change the quality of the classroom.
Yeah, I totally hear all that. And that gets to, I think, probably one of the other recommendations around the dosage, sort of, because that can vary very much from classroom to classroom, too, which I think is interesting. No, I think that all makes a lot of sense, and if it's in the legislation, but I think what I'm suggesting is a version of what you're suggesting, which is some sort of a risk mitigation, as you said.
So to that point, I mean, if we get to a point in the in the future, we can make a recommendation to the legislature and change the legislation.
That's right.
I don't think the legislature does it annually, but what we could do is ask the committee, the research committee, to consider what would maybe what a phase program be to bring future recommendations around that. That way, we don't lose the concept, but being that we don't know what we're doing to some level yet, maybe premature, but something for us to consider because is an annual evaluation required? I don't remember the language in the bill being annual.
Oh, it doesn't say. No, I'm not saying. I'm not saying that it says annual. It says that we do have to have a tool.
Some tool. Yeah. We've chosen this type of tool. But
so it's not say anything about
in terms of what tool that is. Cluster mobilization.
That's right.
It has to be a cluster mobilization. So there's I guess that might be something for the committee to consider. Just because this is what we did, is this the future pathway forever?
Yeah, I think the question on the table is we have to make a decision for this upcoming grant cycle. Those grants are about to get out, and we don't have a threshold yet, and we don't have a tool designated given the task that the board and the research committee was given when they were set out. So this is kind of a, I would say, a stopgap measure for the upcoming contract cycle.
Yeah, and I will say this language regarding subsequent program years, pending your approval, part of that was the kind of white knuckling that's happening for this approval and avoiding that in future years should we need to continue to use something. Without necessarily having to bring it back to you as a body, you know, each time, essentially.
The possible score can be 1 through 7, right? Mm-hmm.
Right.
And 3 is already below the average. So I was wondering, it's okay to have like overall minimum score, but should we have some kind of like minimum for each section? So you have 7 sub score, you can average 3.
Right.
What if you have like 1, so it's the worst score, but 1 is 3.
I don't think we do have language regarding specific domains except for the
maybe every domain
you want. Oh, because you have the average score of 3.67. Yeah.
Right.
That would make sense.
OCC, sort of, is that how you guys handled it with the score of the 4 on the language and literacy?
Yeah,
I think what Dr. Son's suggesting is that they shouldn't, on any of the subscales, correct me if I'm wrong, they shouldn't be lower than a certain threshold. So you can still have a composite score of a 3, but you don't want to score on any of the subscales below a whatever.
Because you can get a 2 in one area and still get a 3.6. It is.
I'm sorry?
Below 3 is really low.
Below 3, right.
Sorry, I'm on the back row. No, I'm okay, but good comment. With LA specifically, we saw it as because we through our programs haven't had the funding necessary for bare bones funding. Until we can confidently give them significant funding to reach higher elements, higher scores, I hesitate to change it. This is, a lot of our providers are, getting kind of close to that 3 right now, and this last year as well, they had a significant cut in funding. A lot of them had to use, all of their carryover to survive. So to me, right now is not the time to change it because they're already really struggling to meet that due to the cuts in funding. Again, that is not ideal. That's not where we want to go forever. But in order to maintain the seats that we have provided through this grant, we felt that to stick with the status quo and to stick with what the field is prepared to give and meet is the way to go because we're trying to build preschool in the state, not close programs, and we're concerned that any change to that at this point could potentially be closing a lot of seats for eligible students in those programs. And coming off of that year where we've had significant funding cuts.
It's also recognition that for LEAs that have 2.5-hour programs, it might be hard for them to score on some of the domains very high just by the nature of the program. So a half-day program may not sort of really rate comparably to a full-day private program.
So I think there was also some acknowledgement that, you know, these are very different animals in many ways. You know, especially if you're looking at things like just, you know, like playground and environmental stuff that that's very important, particularly in a childcare setting. But for most LEAs, they're really concentrating on instruction for 2.5 hours. It's very hard to rate those programs comparably.
In addition, with the LEA specifically, they don't have a lot of control on their environment, like a side of wood. So, you know, they might be forced to use a playground if it's for, you know, third to sixth graders, and they have no choice in that, but they might be scored super low on that, and they have no option to do that. So again, until we feel confident in what we're measuring and the tool we're using, and that they have the funding necessary to reach those elements of quality, we're hesitant to change that.
Dr. Sun, did you have a follow-up question or comment?
I have some idea about something that comes up, not related to meeting on the score, but think of acres are more like furnishing environments. This may not work for our LEA. Class measures more about the environment, what teachers are doing. Maybe the future we talk about different measures, maybe class measures for our situation, because those LEA does not have an environment, they cannot control it enough, and there's no way to increase their quality measure.
And that's definitely what the research subcommittee is continuing to grapple with. So I think that there's no question that there's still that discussion happening, and instead what we need to figure out is what we're going to do for the upcoming school year with those differences.
And given given we have programs that have a 3 but have great student outcomes, it's really hard to say you can't be in the program with enough learning outcomes showing. Like, it's until we figure this out, I think it's, yeah, I agree, sweet love. But it's not predicting outcomes for kids, and so with that lack of relationship, it's hard to say you don't get in because students pass the score, but thanks for having student learning outcomes for children. It doesn't send a great message either.
Debbie, did you have a follow-up?
I did, but I think it really is.
Okay, so we will go to the audience for questions when we have a motion on the table for discussion. So are we ready to make a complicated motion, Mr. Crandall? You volunteer,
I
so.
I have to go to the restroom. No. I move that we accept the recommendations of the subcommittee for the upcoming year. We continue to use the Eckers and use the minimum scores as they've outlined in the recommendations for the upcoming year.
Is there a second on that motion?
Second.
Okay. Is there any discussion? Any discussion from the public on that motion? Jessica?
My only thing is we add that subsequent program years.
I'm sorry. That request would be out of order as not a committee member. So somebody from the committee would have to amend the motion to include that.
I want to hear what you're going to say, though, because I'd be happy to.
I think you just saying to include the full time?
And the reason, yes, the subsequent program years, because of the pickle that we're in this year of having to wait for you guys to approve right, like, during application season, that was our request to help the team that gets money to avoid this next year if we still haven't come through.
I believe that's in the motion because I move to accept the recommendations as given.
As written?
Yeah. Okay, so I think we're good.
Any other discussion from the public on the motion? Yes, ma'am.
I just wanted to speak just a minute. Just as an LEA, I'm the preschool director for Tomoa School District, and just speaking with other LEAs, you know, a lot of us feel like that. We should have the higher expectation, you know, as a 4 versus a 3 as kinds of providers are meeting before. And I understand what Jessica was saying, why she's keeping it for, you know, to have it at a 3. But I feel like, you know, when we did get this grant and we were able to see the changes we needed to make to be compliant with Eckers and everything, we were able to say, funding to help with that. And I know that we're, you know, some areas are out of our hands, like gym time or some things like that, and we just have to accommodate and know we're going to get a little bit lower in that area. But there's other areas where we can beef it up and say, you know, we may get deemed in this area because of our circumstances, but that we can pull it up in these other areas. I just feel like by saying that a 3 is a good enough score for us, I feel like that's kind of we're kind of settling for mediocrity. That's just my thought.
Thank you for the comment. Other comments from the public on the motion before we go back to a vote? Yes, ma'am.
Sorry,
can you introduce yourself, too,
yeah,
please?
Yeah, sorry. I am Kelsey Becker. I'm with the North American School District. And I just wanted to go along with that. With the theory, I've seen it both ways. So for a 3, so I started research really low. And for us to get at least 2 or 3 that were above that, it was really difficult. And it pushed a lot of hard conversations. And so I was able to take to the board and to the admin level what was actually required. And what I saw a lot of the times once we hit 3, they went, okay, we're good now. Let's just stay at 3. We hit the requirement. And there's not expectation after that to increase. And so that's been difficult for me because I expect my program to be at what I strive for as a 5. And when I don't have admin support down at 3, it's really difficult.
I would say we all behave that way, you know, just because we got a 3.67, we want now the 4.67, let's go.
Right. Any other comments from the public before we call the motion back for a vote to the board? Okay, so the motion's been made and seconded. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the ayes have it. Thank you. So for the upcoming school year, we'll stick with the Eckers 3 with a minimum score for LEAs of 3 and for private providers 3.67 for a composite score and for language and literacy and the interaction subscales. Janice.
I'm just wondering, is it appropriate just to respond to, I think it's important that the LEAs know that it's under consideration for future years to raise that expectation. I think the idea was that we didn't want to sort of surprise people by it. So I wanted to, as a member of both the board and the committee, I really want to thank you for your comments and for the great work that you're doing, and have you know that we agree with you, and it'll be under consideration to move that threshold up. So thank you. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the recommendation will go in the minutes, and that is also noted in the recommendation that the thresholds will be it's the expectation of the committee that the thresholds will be increased over the coming program year. Okay, recommendation 2.
Okay, so this is regarding basically a data point we're collecting as far as looking at how these programs are doing. So they've been using their curriculum pre, mid, and post assessments. We expect them to continue to do that and use previous year key entry scores in the SY school year 2020-2021 program year for their students to measure outcomes. So what we mean here is, so we're going to look at essentially, I believe it was Emma came in here last year and kind of showed their pre-mid and post kind of mapped out. We'd like to do that again, adding in the element of the KEEP, since it will be available. What this will look like on a practical level I already am in contact with private providers to either generate or pull SSIDs for their students. So I'll basically get a roster of their students from these private providers, and then I will, for the previous year, so who was in... went to preschool this year, how did your kids do coming into kindergarten next year, is basically what I'll be doing. So prior year rosters is what that's getting at, to see how they're doing, adding another data point into that pre and post conversation. So that's what this recommendation is.
PEEP score?
scores are not adjusted?
Currently, right. Basically, due to when the applications are due and when the KEEP scores will be available, probably in the fall for this first year, once we've done standard setting and everything with our first round of PEEP exits at the spring. Basically, we wanted to use these as sort of a for now sort of thing, and then we'll wrap in the PEEP once it's available.
Is that a change?
Yeah, so all that's changing is we're adding the KEEP entry scores in there.
Adding that.
Yeah, adding that element, as well as the pre-med events. That's the only change since.
And John, sorry, I might have said that. Can you remind me what the programs will use? What will they use it for? Their application?
Right. So this is, so basically the application, and Emma can jump in and correct me if I stumble here. Basically, the application requires them to report these things to us. Currently, again, because of all of the limitations in our data we have on them, we don't have a you have to meet X. So we're going to have them report these, and then we're going to use these as part of our discussion of do we want to have X outcomes in coming program years. So they need to get they need to beat state average on the KEEP or something like that.
And is the current thing we ask for them disaggregated when it comes to the KEEP score? I'm thinking about those programs that we don't serve many more low-income students or students of color or English language learners.
Right. So,
is there sort of an apples-to-apples comparison there?
So, I guess right now, I'm trying to think of the best way to answer that question. Yes, is I guess the short answer. Because right now we're not requiring them to show X improvement with their low income. I don't believe have been disaggregating, but that's typical when we're doing something like this, when we're mapping test scores. So to the best of our ability, we'd be disaggregating that. And we can, certainly you can put that formally in there.
So I have a question for Emma. Is when they're reporting their pre, mid, and post, can they disaggregate those results by low-income students and all students?
Yep.
Okay. So I think if this is part of the application, which it sounds like what this recommendation is proposing is that on the application when they have to provide KEEP entry scores. I mean, their student outcome measures, we're asking for them to provide their pre, mid, and post, and their KEEP scores. And you're suggesting that they provide that information to us disaggregated. Is that what I'm...
We will provide it.
Right. Somebody could provide it, or if that could be part of the...
Well, they would be providing their pre, mid, and post.
Yeah, but like the KEEP we already have, we don't need them to provide it.
The pre-med and post would come to me, but it comes to me in their first, second, and third portion report, and then in their third report they give me basically pre-med and post, and whether kids are meeting benchmarks, and because the assessment is similar, we can watch the growth.
That's the growth measure, so that seems fair. But that's a key.
And it sounds like this is part of the application process.
Yeah,
is that right?
Right.
So
they're giving us this as part of the, right now in the application, they have to provide this information to us, and they don't have to meet a certain benchmark on these assessments. That has been because they're taking different assessments. We would like to continue to have them do that, so give us your pre-med and post, how you're doing. To answer your question, I think we have the means to collect disaggregated, but right now we don't do that. Right.
It does
come to us disaggregated.
Yeah.
So in that case, we have all of our KEEP and our pre-med and post disaggregated by these different
So records. At least the pre-med and post are disaggregated, and typically in the application, if we are asking for the pre-med and post, which we do, they would have to do the previous year because they're still currently, collecting data on their post. So. Yeah.
And then I guess my follow-up question for Jennifer for USBE is, for a private provider who doesn't have KEEP scores, how will they get, how will they know what the KEEP scores were of their kids the previous year?
Right. So that's where it's going to, basically, that's what we already have the system in place for the PEEP with our grantees, where they come to me with a roster. If they give me first name, last name, gender, and date of birth, I can either create an SSID for them or find an existing SSID. If they've taken the kindergarten entry exit profile entry, they will have an SSID. So basically, it'll be the same system. They'll contact me, I will send them their KEEP scores, and then they will attach them when they send in their application to Emma or Jessica. Is basically what that'll look like.
But for this grant cycle, if a program is getting expanded student access funding this year, mm-hmm. obviously they'll have the pre, mid, and post, but will you know what the KEEP score was of their students from last year?
Right, so they'd be sending...
I think that's what I'm... How,
yeah, sorry, right? I'm probably just not explaining this well. So, yeah, I mean...
As long as you can tell us that that would work, then right. I think that that recommendation makes
right.
sense.
Right, so basically, WeFriends is going to send me their roster from 2018, and I'm going to match them up to 2019's entry and
okay.
see how those kids did.
Okay.
And I'm going to say, this is how your kids did, and then they will attach that with their application.
Got it. Okay.
What about new grantees that potentially is a private provider that haven't had been required to do a PEEP assessment? Have we
it's the same
about
thing?
Right. So because we're doing because it's tied to kinder,
yeah.
they'll have SSIDs if they took the KEEP. So I can, you know, they'll send me their roster from prior year, 2018. I'll see how those kids did on 2019 KEEP, mm-hmm. And whether or not they've ever talked to us before, some amount of their kids will have entered kindergarten and taken the kindergarten entry exit profile. So it'll be the same process. And this is a pretty quick process. We've had some back and forth on whether we have the capacity to do this. It's not hard for these private programs. They're not huge programs. So pulling
Thank you for that clarification. Other questions from the committee? I'll see if there's questions from the board first. Other questions from the board?
Just like a point of note, we do have the legislation asked to have funding to be able to run any private school that wants to participate and keep moving forward. So they'll have access to PEEP in the future if they don't go through.
Right. Okay. Other questions on that recommendation?
I think it's the school year that's throwing me off.
Yeah.
This is for people applying for next year.
Right.
We're going to be using. 2 years ago, you know?
Basically.
Like, okay.
Yeah, I it's going to be spread out
right.
pretty far. But
I agree with the enrollment from 2 years ago, but this is kindergarten this year.
This year, so they can be in the program next
it's
year,
just,
right?
It's,
yeah.
So is there a motion to accept recommendation number 2 from the board?
I'll make a motion to accept recommendation 2.
As written.
Second by Janice. Is there any discussion from the board? Any discussion from staff?
Yeah, I just have, maybe this is a question we can talk about afterwards, but it was just a question of if they're a new program or they're a grantee and they're coming to you and they only have 3 weeks to apply for the application, is there a capacity at Utah State Board of Education to get that data to the grantee in time to be able to send that information in before the deadline?
Yeah, I mean, I'm frankly not worried about it. It probably will take me about 20 minutes to school. So it's not a very belabored process once I have their kids' roster information.
And we can work yeah. those details off. I mean, if this is going to be part of the recommendation, then it's going to have to get
one
figured out. So
why their data's not there, then we say, you know, edit everything else in, we'll get the data.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Any discussion from the public on recommendation number 2?
Sorry, this is my only time I've come down here, so I just wanted to ask.
You don't, go ahead.
I was just wondering if there's any been, or if any talk about making an aligned pre-mid and post-assessment. Just from talking to other districts, we're all using our own form of pre-mid and post, which may look very different. And I'm worried that there might be variation between what actually high quality for pre-med and post may be. I know a lot of you use the DOTS, but what we've noticed with the DOTS all is interpretation because it's not aligning with exactly what we're having to reform on. So there's any talk about creating almost, not like a PEEP assessment, but something that we can follow for our own pre-med and post. That makes sense.
So in terms of the motion, that's something we can come, that
suggestion is something we can come back to, unless somebody, a member of the board, somehow wanted to amend the motion and give them that feedback. Any other questions?
So I think the concern becomes if when you're reporting your data on your reports, you're comparing yourself to yourself. You're showing that growth. So I think, sorry to introduce myself, my name is Amy Adler. I coach for three of the programs that are becoming quality, and then I work with several LEAs that are on expanded access. I think the concern becomes that it's not only are you using different assessments, but if that becomes part of the application process, you're now comparing yourself, those benchmarks, you're not comparing to yourself, you're using that to compare to others, open to your own interpretation. So I don't know how heavily that's weighted, but you feel kind of unsettled that, you know, I know between the three programs I work with, the data is pulled very differently, and it looks different. Even just using the dot to gold and the dot. And my other ones that both use the dot. It's still different. So I don't know how that plays into the how heavily it's weighted on the application.
Can I speak to that?
Sure. Is the requirement that you use one, the weighting of it is not significant. It's just meeting the high quality criteria that you have that practice in place. In terms of what that measures and how you do it, isn't scored at all. It's just, did you perform a checkpoint? Or do you have one? Check. I agree that there's opportunity to improve our consistency of what we're measuring. If there's interest from you all, because that's I'm all about common assessment and allows us to look more equally across programs. But I don't know what the board's position is on that. I think for me it makes sense because then we can help and inform, like, oh, this program really is getting good accountability, or what are they doing, how can we learn from it, what can we share with others. But currently the way that the grading of it is, it's really just a checkbox of do you have
it is a concern, like, and it is talked between different LEAs and my private provider that I work for. So it is, I mean, it's enough that that discussion is out there, and if they are concerned. So it's nice to have that information.
Do you have something in place? You're trying to show that you have outcomes happening, but we all know those tests are very different, and what one test tells you wouldn't be the same thing.
Yeah, well, so. But I think that the programs out there would appreciate and would benefit from an aligned.
And I'll just make one additional comment to that, and then go to Janice. That the key data is designed to have that consistency, and once we have that data and we can track it, I think what previous conversations we've had about pre, mid, and post and how it varies from program to program is that, like so much of this, a lot of these measures might eventually go away. So with SQUARE focus on school year 2021, which is application period now, the standard measure we were hoping to all use is eventually the KEEP. How you get to those KEEP proficiency scores is going to be individual by every program. Janice.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one thing we could consider is adding to the agenda of the subcommittee, the research subcommittee, is to look at the curriculum-based pre, mid, and post. And some of it is going to be based on how evidence-based the curriculum is. But I think that's a really good point. And I think to Jennifer's comments as well, like from a continuous improvement perspective, some sort of alignment. But so I would propose that we add that to the work that we're going to be doing in the subcommittee.
Okay. So in terms of the motion that's before us, and then we can come back to that for a recommendation. The motion is to adopt recommendation 2, and I'm going to try to speed along. We have 2 more recommendations and the KEEP presentation. So the motion is to adopt recommendation number 2. It's been made and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And the ayes have it, and the motion is carried. Recommendation number 3.
Okay. This will give Steve another opportunity to make a complicated motion. So basically, this measure is, again, kind of broken up into a couple of parts. So we'd like to establish a 12-month look-back period in which past observations can be used when completed by an OCC, Office of Child Care, or Utah State Board of Education Program Specialist, or contracted specialist. We're contracting out for some of these trained in Eckers 3 when considering programs for the 2020 to 2021 program year and subsequent program years, pending the School Readiness Board approval of their tool. And then basically we acknowledge that there are certain resource limitations that have led us to recommend the second part of this, that basically our minimum observations for these programs. For the LEAs, USBE has recommended observing one class session per 500 students. And for the providers, the Office of Child Care recommends observing a minimum of one-third of programs in a classroom. If a private provider serves over 500 students, Office of Child Care will follow USBE guidelines above, which is that line right there. So any questions regarding that?
Any questions from the board? Jennifer?
I can't vote yes for this, so tell me when this is.
You can't vote yet. Would you like to
express your concern? I don't really need a motion. Parliamentary procedure and I are still being mastered. But,
well, this is a chance for questions about it. So, do you have questions about it?
Maybe I'll start with a question.
Okay.
We had talked previously about one observation not being sufficient for LEAs with sizes of that kind of student population. I'm surprised to see the recommendation come back still with one class, given we have additional funds to handle more observations. I would like to see that number increased, personally. So tell me maybe the committee's feelings on that so you can persuade me.
That's a great question.
I actually, this is news to me that you have funding to do more, because that was our whole reason. Mm-hmm. Or that's the only reason that I agreed with it, was a resource constraint.
Yeah.
So if you're saying that there are resources, that I think, I know I speak for Mark and myself, that we would like to see more. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and I think Jessica and Jimmy and I walked out of that meeting kind of recognizing the shortcomings of that, that, you know, if we're going and looking at one classroom for a small program, there's no, among other things, there's no safety net if they do very, very poorly. You know, that's sort of our only data point.
Isn't that a minimum, though? I mean, you can observe more observations.
The way it's written.
We did not write it as a minimum, and the committee had adjourned at the time that we thought of adding the words minimum to this. So, yeah, and we've had discussions with Jennifer kind of related to
previewing it. I just think relying on one classroom for that many students being impacted seems too small in scale, and one of the reasons we advocated on the Hill was to get more dollars to be able to do a better job at doing observations, and we were able to get that last year. So this year, that's how we're doing class and Eckers kind of parallel in classrooms to kind of get data on both sides. And in future years, or even this year, it would allow us to do more class observations using whichever tool we land on with a lower ratio, I guess. I think we either change the ratio, change it, maybe that's Board Member Crandall said, to a minimum, but I just think one is insufficient for really making an informed decision on whether a program is quality. I may have gone into a great classroom today or a really bad one, and I'm, for any program, that's a little scary. We would want a little more. I mean, you guys do one-third of the classrooms in the program at the private school level, so I think our minimum, I appreciate the respect of resources, but that is no longer
if it's in order, I would love to know what you would recommend, because I'd like to do as many as you can afford. But I don't have that information.
So we have a few hundred thousand dollars we can invest in observations. I don't know how much they're costing us. Do you have an idea? I have to turn to my fixed on a partner in crime. So as far as for the class observers, we're going to be doing paying them like $300 per observation. With this one, I'll just kind of speak to the concern that came to my mind after we made this motion. The point in doing this is to kind of be able to open up to get a larger sample size for those larger districts, so that if they did have a classroom that was scored poorly, to get a larger sample and get an average and therefore feel more comfortable moving forward and not be risking closing their program off of seats. The problem that I realized after was that for our smaller LEAs that are 500 or less,
There's no safety net for them, that if we pick the wrong teacher. As far as our capacity to do additional ECRs, that is really small right now. So trying to find a balance in that, like, if we put in just observing a minimum, then we as specialists could determine, like, a check-back procedure that we know that our current procedure isn't taking an accurate measurement. So that we could go and take, like, two additional observations and make an average of three. So I feel like the change that we've made is great and kind of provides that balance for the larger LEAs, for the ones that are only receiving one observation. But I don't want them to be, you know, at risk of not being able to apply for funding just because we picked one classroom. So that was my main concern on this, that we have adding a minimum would allow us to do a check back and make sure that the program really has lost eligibility to apply for continued funding.
And I'm not so worried about that. I want to make sure we're measuring the quality of a program. And one, when you have that many classrooms, you have 500 kids. Has a lot of classrooms. And so maybe it's the percentage of the classrooms, or it's one for every smaller number than 500 kids. I would love a proposal from another board member than myself. And I think the same goes with the private line. That almost seems to reduce the number of observations you do, given you do one-third of classrooms. Same. I mean, one-third is probably too many in a 500 setting, maybe.
Best practice is to do a third.
Yeah.
That's the recommendation of the authors.
But if we're going to 500, now you only have to do one. That seems weird, too.
Right, and my understanding is that and somebody from who was part of the discussion was that that's for the Head Start programs, which in some of our Head Start programs look more like an LEA than they do a private child care program.
Right.
So, like, UCA has more location classrooms. So I think there was an attempt at parity between the privates and the publics when they were in these massive programs.
Yeah, that was exactly it. That was why we included the language there, was that, yeah, and some of our private programs are
We've talked about this before, a thing or an issue. I'm just trying to think reasonable, like a grant versus, well, how many classrooms we run?
We have almost 100 students.
Okay, so you can kind of mention, like, we came in and just left at one. Do you like it on that data, or? Okay, just checking. I mean, I don't want to burden ourselves not to get them too. But to feel confident, I would feel better with that. A higher percentage of those classrooms, knowing one of 14 is less than 10%, right? Like, what's the happiness? Any suggestions? I mean, 5%?
I'm happy to hear a recommendation. I guess my concern is that you set it too high if we don't get to it, as long as we penalize the program. And so I think having a minimum number is good, and then if you have resources to do more,
right,
to get more information, but not feeling like we're going to ding somebody.
Feel like you're thinking.
Because we do. Sometimes I do too.
That can get us into trouble from the program side.
I don't want to go out of order here, but you might have something. I know that we brainstormed, the three of us, a few options, so you might have something that we sent you as well. I don't know if I don't want to win the discussion.
Well, I'm just wondering in terms, did you have a question or comment, Debbie? I just am wondering in terms of trying to get this approved on some level, if we just vote on the minimum with the understanding that USBE will go back and look at their data and potentially conduct more than the minimum.
Yeah, and resources, too.
Right.
I know about the extra resources.
Yeah.
Is it possible to vote on the first half of the recommendation here, which I understand to be just be very clear with the programs as they apply, that we're going to be looking at that 12-month period back? But we can't change what happened in the past with how many observations were done per classroom. So could we take that up next meeting after Jennifer and her team have done a little bit of
data? The challenge with taking it up next meeting is that the first phase of the application is the observation. So the staff need to know how many programs they need to observe to see if they should invite programs to apply for the full application. So I wish that was the case. So in terms of moving the work forward, establishing that minimum might be, I don't know.
So are you suggesting that next
year, when they bring their recommendations, this can be part of that.
Yeah, I mean, potentially, depending on how the motion is phrased, they can observe more this year, too. We don't have to wait until next year.
Could we give you guys a suggestion to change the wording? Not now, but in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the language in here is for current program year and subsequent program years, pending you guys wanting us to do something.
Always change.
That's always true.
Change.
And just kind of, I guess, to speak to what Tracy was saying, adding, like, you know, recommends observing a minimum of one class, you know, just, I guess, for seeing this in perspective, there are a lot of procedural elements of this application program that are not directly approved by this body. So if you're comfortable with something like what Tracy was describing, where you say a minimum of, and then we kind of go back, confer, and then report out, that is something we could do, certainly.
It also would provide an opportunity to figure out how many you could do based on funding and how many reliable observers you can get
done right now.
Anyway,
right?
To
get done the next 2 months and not have staff.
Right.
But if we know future planning, we want to do at least 3 sessions. I don't care what your program is. I think we should see more than one session. But if we could do some number gathering on that, maybe there's the recommendation that can come back that's more representative of the money we have available to be more comprehensive in our observations than we currently have been, given lack of resources. So lack of resources is not our problem anymore. It's lack of trained personnel is our problem. So I would love to say my recommendation, my motion would be to amend LEA's:USB recommends observing at a minimum one class session for 500 students. So if you have a 1,000 student program, it'd be 2 at a minimum. And then as staff, if we have people available this year, we can do more, and next year we can wrap this up, knowing we can predict and build the capacity of staff to do it.
So is your motion to adopt recommendation 3 as written with the change that you would recommend observing a minimum of one class session per 500 students in an LEA?
And the private provider.
And the private provider that serves more than 500?
I think it's equally equitable. I don't care what kind of program you are. Okay, let me get your impact. Is there a second?
That's way more complicated than my motion. Yeah.
Discussion. There's a second by Debbie. I would propose an amendment to change the word trained in Eckers 3 to reliable in Eckers 3.
Yeah, I'll second that.
Any discussion on the amended motion? Any discussion from the public on the amended motion? Okay, so changing train to reliable, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the ayes have it. And now on to the underlying motion. Any discussion on the underlying motion for recommendation number 3? Discussion for board? Staff discussion? Any discussion from the public? Question, comment on the underlying motion? Yes.
I feel like I'm going to be really representing our rules. And I fall into that under 500. And for this year, I have a very, very high turnover rate. And I had the luck of the draw this year to be the veteran teacher. And I have, as an existing classroom, I had a brand new teacher, Ann Parrott. If she would have picked that classroom, I would be honest, I wouldn't have been high quality yet. I have 3 other teachers who are high quality.
Right.
And I would have fell out of this. If she would have assessed that classroom this year, I would be able to apply because I would have been high quality, the majority of mine are. So this really would affect the program if a smaller district because I don't have the opportunity to represent our program with one before. Only because I have such a high turnover rate. For instance, we hired this gal in August and they came in like December. So I had like 4 short months to bring in this teacher high quality. Even though the classroom was existing, but that's only half of the effort score. I think the harder part is the teacher and their interactions. And we only have EDA personnel, they're not certified teachers, so I'm pulling someone off the street and getting them ready to get to a 3. degree, which, you know, we talked about is low, but someone off the street, that's hard.
Well, and I wonder, to me, this recommendation allows us to do more than one if we so choose. So if we understand your constraints, or we say, you know what,
leave,
that wasn't your best. But that's my impression of this recommendation, that I could, if I chose as the program people doing your observations, we're going to do two.
Okay.
I just want to make sure.
I think this gives that possibility.
But tell me if you guys interpret it differently. My interpretation of it would allow us for flexibility.
Yep. I guess my only comment to that would be we might have to establish some standards so we're not continuing to go back, because it's really supposed to be reflective of the whole program.
Right.
And we have the same problem, the same challenge with private child care.
I
don't
know if we that even say a minimum of two. Totally kill my standoff. To do one and say your quality seems not a quality way to deem quality. No matter how big your program is. Unless you only have one classroom, that's one would make sense. That's why I'm like, I think from a board language it works, from a programmatic lens it allows us the flexibility to do more if we seek to do more. Right.
Yeah.
Well,
as long as there's limitations of, like, we're not just going to keep coming, because it gives you flexibility, and same on the private, I think programs need to have some degree of certainty that we're not going to keep coming in until
right.
we finally get somebody who gets a 3.67. So,
but I think allowing for some kind of communication, or she says, I have three high-quality teachers and one that isn't. You observe the one that isn't, you're like, oh, okay, well, I want to see one that is. That would give some flexibility to the people doing the observations to have
yeah.
the information they want to know, I think.
But it's not an egg hunt either. Like, let me just see
yeah.
the
right,
questions
right.
that are. Like, we want to, the randomness of it makes it.
Yeah,
it's
going to be one observed classroom within a minute.
Yeah, and I think most of our programs would be open to two classes. I don't actually value two classrooms, because then we have a lot of teachers that feel like whether my district is on this program is on me.
Right.
That's a lot of pressure for one educator, knowing it is a program, but that person is being evaluated,
but,
right?
But also, if you randomly selected a teacher that started last week,
mm-hmm.
and you didn't have that information, you kind of want to know that information. Well, okay, then.
Right. I know the best one.
Yeah, that's your
yeah.
I can kind of see it both ways, because, I mean, not to go into the weeds of the Office of Child Care, we have a quality system, and that just the classrooms are randomized, and it's the luck of the draw.
It is.
And one year they might have you, the draw might be good, and the next year the draw might be not good. And that's the way you reflect continuity across the whole program,
on
the quality of the whole program. I'm just
like,
that's how we do it.
10-15% of the population being evaluated, but let's see if we have capacity to do that.
Right. So I think that with that under kind of under advisement, that you're not suggesting to withdraw and make a new one. You're good with the minimum.
The flexibility. I'd like to come back to you with more specific recommendations, but at this time, it allows us to move forward through the grant cycle we need to do right now and keep improving on our practice. So. Mm-hmm.
I just have one concern about, like you said, if somebody did go to school and somebody said, oh, well, you know, you chose a classroom with a new teacher. Well, then you're putting bias into your assessment, because now they know, oh, okay, well, what should I do? And you're putting that person in a problem.
And I think that's where we do, too,
yeah.
where we're saying, we still expect all of your program
right.
quality.
Right.
We know there are some teacher variables.
So,
yeah. But observing one classroom leads us to not
recognizing
right.
that. And I agree with that, but I'm just saying we shouldn't put anybody in that position to feel like...
Right. And a lot of it's been manpower, but we are kind of overcoming that now, that we don't need to say it's on you solely to pass this quality, whether you can apply or not. I mean, that's ultimately what we're looking at right now, is can you apply? Do you have enough quality to apply?
Right.
Any other discussion on this motion? We still have one more motion to consider. Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the ayes have it. Recommendation number 4.
Okay. I mean, briefly...
you need a break, John? You've been up there a long time.
No.
I'm doing
fine. We should get him a chair.
I think on the next agenda, it's going to be okay. Basically, this recommendation is that we're going to do the stuff you just agreed to. You know, that we, as a research subcommittee, will continue to exist. And we'll follow through on the recommendations 1 through 3 as far as what you have approved for us to look into. We will further investigate the appropriate tool or tools in private and public program contexts. Research. We will follow our research plan that we touched on in the fall, which will include the extent to which PEEP and KEEP assessments will be utilized to assess student outcomes, and continued research to determine an ongoing observation tool, including an analysis of class and Eckers 3 overlap, and eligibility score thresholds to apply for grant funding. So we just, this recommendation is just allowing us to continue to look into these questions as a subcommittee.
Motion, we accept this recommendation. Are you making that as a motion?
I am.
Okay. Is there a second?
I second that.
Is there any discussion? The only discussion would be to add the
scope. How many members are on that you are suggesting?
Yeah, so absolutely. So,
Sorry,
we had two. Deferred to Janice. So, and then we'll come back to your question. Janice, so what was...
That we look into an alignment of the curriculum-based pre-mid and post-assessment. And we add that to our scope.
And Jamie?
I can just ask how many members who is being represented?
Yeah, so there's from State Board of Education, there's Jimmy Hernandez, myself, both research consultants, Jessica Smith and Jamie Robinson, both are preschool and early childhood education specialists. There's Emma Munch from DWS, Janice Stebno from Swords and Impact, Mark Innocenti from USU, and Kelly Kohler from Head Start, who oversees Head Start at DWS.
So we're just missing a private provider component.
Yeah, we don't. So, I mean, we have really the only... We don't have any private providers or public school providers. We don't have either of those. We really only have our Head Start programs represented on the subcommittee.
Maybe something to consider?
Yeah, we'd like to do that. That was something that at least the board people were discussing, that we'd like to bring in some more representation as we kind of continue the work.
Okay, any discussion from the public on the motion to keep the work of the research subcommittee rolling? Okay, motion's been made and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion carried. Okay. Thank you very much, John. We said we had a packed agenda and we're really far behind, so we're going to move on to the PEEP and KEEP assessments, which was a holdover agenda item from our last meeting, and my guess is that given that we only have 25 minutes left, the remainder of the agenda will be tabled to our next meeting. So I will turn the time over to Jennifer and members of the USBE staff.
All right, so I'm going to talk back because that's who I am, and that might help if I got up a little bit. Jessica and John will also chime in, as there are certain elements, because I don't do this on an everyday basis, that I may not know that you might ask questions for. So am I going back? There you go. So we're going to talk about PEEP and KEEP. PEEP is the preschool entry and exit profile. That's what PEEP stands for. KEEP is the kindergarten entry and exit profile. Basically, a beginning and end of year assessment that we give our students as they come into preschool and kindergarten. Currently, PEEP is only administered in the grant program that we collect data for. Future years, if the bill passes, it'll be for any provider that would like to put their data into the program. KEEP is all public schools except for, I think, 3 that opt out because they don't receive any funds that go towards the space. Overall, we get about 48,000, 46,000 kindergarten students in the KEEP data every year. So we're going to talk specifically about preschool entry-exit profile. So you can kind of build your familiarity around this assessment. It's a program. Any participating grantee in the program has to administer this assessment beginning of the year to the end of the year. And it's really meant to help us with program effectiveness. Ultimately, the whole point of learning or programs would be to help with student learning and make sure we're having really great outcomes. So this is one way for us to do that, and we've got the levels of academic and social-emotional, so it hits literacy and numeracy as well as social-emotional aspects that have had high predictability of being able to predict future academic outcomes.
So you're not going to see every measure on this assessment. We really did keep it short and sweet, knowing that these are four-year-olds that we're testing and have to keep that developmentally appropriate piece in place. But there are some key things that if students came in ready for preschool, these are highly predictive that they would continue to be ready versus if they don't come with these skills or leave with these skills. So the one thing to keep in mind is the PEAK exit is the exact same test as the kindergarten entry. So it will give us some opportunity to also look at summer slide as we look across the programs. Like they left the preschool program here, they entered kindergarten here. How did summer impact their learning or their regression in learning? So that'll be some interesting data that we haven't had before, given we haven't had preschool assessments. We've only had KEAK for a couple of years, so we're in our third year of data collection. So it's also to help us kind of cost-benefit analysis to prove to the legislature early learning matters, look at when we have these opportunities to provide pathway changes for student learning, the ability for us to do that, and the future outcomes that can come from that. It'll allow us to look at the longitudinal impact as well. So students who participated in programs when they entered, how are they doing by third grade or beyond? So starting to see those longitudinal trends. And then just the effectiveness of programs. So we would optimally expect that if a kid came in on a level one, which we'll talk about here in a minute, we would like them not to leave on a level one. The test is different. It is not measuring the same things from beginning to end. So you can't say, oh, they went from a level one to a level one, they didn't grow. No, the test is more rigorous at the end than it is at the beginning. They could have grown, they just didn't grow as much as we would hope. We would expect kids to move at least a level in the assessment if the learning is really making a difference. There is the enhancements for student learning. So this is really around program data as before, and then really looking at learning. This intention is that when we give the assessment, it gives the educator who gave the assessment to the child some information about where this kid's coming in and where I might need to intervene. We don't need to wait in preschool to intervene on children. It's pretty apparent right up front. We're a little behind. Not all kids will need sustained intervention, but some of them are going to need it right out the get-go. Even in kindergarten, some of our teachers wait. Like, I'm going to wait 6 weeks to see if they just magically come around. There's no need to wait. We're going to intervene now, and if they don't need us in 3 weeks, great. We at least got them started with that fresh start. And so really looking at how this impacts short and long term, especially for our at-risk students, given a lot of our grant projects are really based on a more at-risk population. Jessica handed out to you a sample, I believe, saw her walking around, of the PEAK. So this is PEAK Entry. Our other books of the PEAK Exit is this cauliflower blue, I don't know, cherry little blue. But they changed to help the teachers know which test is which. And honestly, what you'll find inside is just kind of, we've got our goal, and like I said at the beginning, these are indicators that have been proven to measure or predict academic success. So a lot of kindergarten teachers, for example, thought colors was super important. Colors does not predict future academic success, since you won't see colors on the test. Although everyone who ever went to kindergarten 20, 30 years ago, you were asked if you knew your colors. There is no data that validates that knowing your colors predicts future academic achievement. So all of ours were really measured by the research literature with success, saying these are the things that matter. And so you'll see the three areas that we really focus on. Things are the literacy elements specifically. So there's some vocabulary, you know, oral language really matters. So you'll see a couple components there. Directionality, do they have any concept of print already developed as they're coming in? Gives us some indication of whether they've been read to or engaged in text in the home. Concepts of letter or number, are they able to kind of distinguish the differences? Letter recognition, handwriting, just kind of seeing, do they know how to hold a pencil? Being able to form some basic letters, word parts, letter sounds. Some of these build, like you'll see a more advanced version at the end of the year. Some of them are more like if the task significantly changes, but it's measuring a similar skill. If we went really fast. Here's PEAK Math. Again, most predictive skill around those things. These are very similar from one to from beginning to end, but there's a number of expectations kind of change. Kind of, you can get a sense in the book of all the different ones if you're curious what those all mean. And then the lifelong learning practices, aka social emotional skills. We had to kind of shadow it with this new language. But that's what it is. So these lifelong learning practices, as they're kind of engaging in the pre-assessment, the first time they get it, the PEAK entry, we kind of measure them on that 15-minute experience. At the end of the year, we get to take into account that we've had this child for months, maybe weeks, depending on the student's entry point, and we're able to account for what we've seen in the last month of school as part of this rather than the 15-minute measure. So much more accurate in terms of that data at the end of the year, but when we went out and kind of did some pilot testing, we had kids that would crawl across the table, not knowing, like, at school we don't really do that. And so there's just things that you learn really quickly about a child that's like, well, okay, we're going to have a little more explicit directions about appropriate behavior in school.
I have
kids that don't have different coaching as well. So you just kind of get a sample of what we did and really consulted the literature to determine the areas that we were going to look for because of their predictive value. It's not that there's not other measures that you could look at, but they're not predictive of future academic outcomes, and so we really wanted to focus our efforts there. For peak entry, we administered in the fall. It's 4 weeks before the first day and 4 weeks after, so they have kind of 8 weeks to give that assessment, so they can have the kid come in early before school starts or actually do it as part of the school day. Data is submitted by September 30th. This is how many students we had tested this year. And those are really just mostly the grantees. I think maybe only the grantees. Okay. So 6,000 students gives us a good body, but knowing in kindergarten we have closer to 48,000, we have a lot of room to grow in terms of being able to have comparison groups, control and treatment groups, and all of those things that right now they're all in the treatment. It's hard to compare them to a non-treatment group. And so we've got some data issues to kind of work out, but if the bill passes, we'll have more people wanting to put their data in, and we'll have to do it, which would be great. But until that time, the number of providers in the program, so that might help us. We have 22 programs, supposedly, I have. And then initial outcomes. I would like you to note the differences between the two content areas. Drastic, right? So literacy is definitely an area. When we come in kindergarten, we're usually closer to 60%. 60% ready, 40% not. So luckily, the PEEP entry is not the same story as PEEP entry, but still a little scary. And then mathematics, we always see a difference between literacy and math. Even if you're not in a literacy-rich home, oftentimes kids have been asked, like, they know when they have more or less than another kid, like, you have more than me. Like, that's just a natural, like, math progression. And so you'll see those are usually a little bit higher because if they counted their fruit snacks, had to share, like, they have some mathematical skills that are really developmental.
And I did just want to say, if you're used to looking at the PEEP, we're talking about the PEEP, there are three levels. For the PEEP, it's dichotomous, either they're at benchmark or comes. So this is one of those.
So basically, these ones are at benchmark, and all the other kids are not. at least where we would hope for them to come in. For exit, you'll be expecting as programs are kind of wrapping up, we're getting to that time of year where some of our preschool programs will start wrapping in April and May. They get the last 4 weeks of the school year to administer the PEEP exit, and their data has to be submitted by June 15th. Most will be in before that because their programs end way earlier than that, but that gives us kind of a date at which we can start pulling the data and start to kind of analyze it. And so, given we have some restraints with the USBE when they lock down our systems, we anticipate we'll be able to report out to this body or anybody interested in kind of July, August annually with the results of that assessment. And knowing where kids are, looking at different programs, looking at different variables. I think the question, like, each program, what's the average of the programs doing and all of those things. So, PEEP to kindergarten entry, like I said, PEEP exit is the same thing as PEEP entry. So just keep that in mind, the exact same assessment they get at the end of preschool, they get when they come back in the fall in kindergarten. We don't expect that it changes the outcome. Kids are not going to remember this 15-minute test they took, I'm going to tell you, and if they do, it'll be like one moment. They won't have enough, like, testing because there's enough time. But it gives us the ability to look at that summer slide. So we start to see those differences. Might give us an opportunity to seek funding to kind of close that summer slide opportunity and allows us to validate the outcomes. If we see drastic differences between how they performed in kindergarten compared to how they left preschool, there is some summer slide story, but we see that programmatically. We have questions to go back to the preschool to say, you have such high outcomes. When they entered kindergarten, that was not the same. So it holds some validity for both programs to make sure we're administering appropriately and not altering our data in inappropriate ways.
Quick question?
Yes.
And so the 2 or 3 months...
I'm not the question slide.
Well done.
Go for it. Is it like the 2 months or 3 months in between the PEEP exit and the kindergarten the sort of natural developmental thing?
Yeah, that you don't have a, what's it called, practice effect? So there's not a practice effect when you give that much space of time between those few months periods. So that was kind of our goal, is to make sure the window was run to allow that practice effect to not be an issue when we look at, are they just doing this because they've already done it once? But that gap in between, you've all seen students that you learned something last week and then the next week it's gone. We expect over 3 months it's really gone.
But what about just sort of growth over that like 3 month period? So
well, this is the hard part of measuring a preschool at all, is the natural development pieces that they grow so quickly that you can't account for with an assessment. So we have to take anything in the preschool space with some understanding that there are developmental effects that are just natural that are going to happen. So the kid might actually grow a little over the summer. If you were on that trajectory and your parents keep going, you might come in higher than you left preschool due to developmental aspirations, right? So that is one of those things I'm not sure we can account for given the age. We expect to see that much more free in this space than any other age. Is it time for the rally? I see you all leaving. Time for the rally. I'll
be out
there.
We all have to be there. So.
Yeah. I have to speak for Sid. So get excited, everyone.
Amy? How is the PEEP exit meet score? Is it the dichotomous met or didn't meet, or is it the level 1, 2, 3, so you can compare to the PEEP?
Great question. Do you want to answer that because you know Wayman?
So
I'm not sure we've decided.
Done standard setting.
There you
obviously,
go.
We haven't done the test. My understanding, Jessica, was your understanding that they would do the 3 level?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think we are going to do the 3 level.
We're anticipating that, but because we haven't had kids test on it,
right,
always standard set after. But
well, you will likely be able to, no matter how you and to be able to do different analyses to understand growth.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. They're the same items, so we can look at that.
Yeah.
So with the PEEP, the initial PEEP testing that's 4 weeks before, 4 weeks after, and the grant application is asking for mid, can someone use this PEEP and do the same initial test in the middle of the year, or is
I don't think there's anything that regulates them. I'm not saying that's best practice, but if someone wanted to use PEEP entry and either
do a mid-PEEP
exit mid-year or even PEEP entry again as a let's see how far they've come along, or if the kid was proficient in PEEP entry, maybe I want to get exit middle of the year based on student needs.
See, and so we've had students who began the year with this, and their parents let us know that they're moving out of state. So we did that same PEEP assessment with them and did see growth in that period of time, but I didn't know if that was as reliable as you would expect.
Yeah, ours is really intended for that time of year, but not saying that we've talked about that with even PEEP of people, you could use it middle of the year, whichever version you wanted. Ultimately, this is an end of year expectation, but if you want to kind of see where are they on the trajectory towards achieving that end of year expectation,
well,
you could.
My teachers got excited when they're like, hey,
they've
gone there.
Yeah, so I mean, it kind of inflamed me.
Yeah. I would just say, like, it's fine if programs want to choose to see the growth, but as far as like the requirement of the grant, they should not be using the PEEP as their pre-mid and post, because it's not comprehensive enough to identify all the needs of preschool students and to guide the instruction necessary. So if you wanted to do it like on top of your pre-mid and post, just to see the like a midway growth point, then that's fine, but you should never be using the PEEP as your pre-mid and post.
Okay. I think so. I mean, this is not meant to be your full curriculum. These are just highly predictive factors, which is great. I mean, it's good to know if they get these, they should get other things, but it's not going to be a full curricular check, nor does it hit other topics. Okay, so that's kind of it for me. See? Quick.
Great. Yeah. Thank you.
You talk
Thanks, Jennifer.
Fine.
So next, we have 10 minutes left, so maybe we can zip through the rest of this with 10 minutes. The next item on the agenda is the mid-year grant and budget updates, and let's start with the budget update, Debbie, if that's okay.
Yeah, I'll just give it really quick.
And it's in your packet for board members. You have the detailed budget in your packet.
So we started the year off with $14.9 million. That consisted of a carryover balance that we carry over the fund, and then the $3 million appropriation that so far has gone back to ongoing. If nothing changes in the next 2 weeks, we will continue to have it ongoing. Caveat is we got 2 weeks left, right?
Fingers crossed.
And then the other $6 million that we received this year. So we started with $14.9 million. Year to date, actually through January, we've only spent $3.5 million this year, but we have obligated in contracts with the expanded seats, another $5 million with some other small dollars amount. The $5.8 million of that is investor payout. Just so you know, that was we took into account what the new numbers are when we did that calculation for this side. So 5.8 is now like the maximum that can be paid out, knowing that that will fluctuate every year going forward and stuff. We are seeing an underpayment in the expanded seats, and so therefore we do expect some to roll back to next year's fund. So if nothing else, if it were all payout, we would have only the $9 million next year. But because we do expect some carryover, we see it probably a little bit more than that. So we're looking good. We're still positive, and that's all that matters, right? So we are positive and stuff. Any questions about the budget?
That was fast. Are there any questions?
Yeah, for Debbie? It was fast.
You look at the
she learned from me.
The spreadsheet that's in there.
If you have any questions, please feel free to reach out. We can. To noon, and we can answer any questions you have. Okay?
And we don't have to take a motion on this. This isn't like something that we need to approve, but this is the first time that we've given a mid-year budget update for us to kind of keep tabs on where the money is at. So
also to help you guys knowing next year coming up, how much you actually have available for next year's grants as that coming up. So, okay.
Thanks, Debbie. And then a quick overview for the grants, both expanded student access and becoming quality.
Okay, so just as an update, the first phase of the expanded student access grant application has been released. It was released on Friday. All local education agencies and private providers have had those email blasts out. So the next phase is the invitation back to expanded student access, doing FS3 observations, and then releasing the becoming high quality grants. So just a brief view, you can see that we have two private providers and two local education agencies. We actually had two of our local education agencies here today, North St. Pete and Tooele School District. We have We Friends and also ABC Great Beginnings. So this is just an overview of the teachers. So as you know, we do observe our ECAS3's beginning and end of school year. So next time we meet, I'll be giving those updates for beginning and end of year. We do give professional development and coaching feedback on the ECAS3's. And they also have internal coaches that Samantha Makua, who might want to back here. Samantha is the external coach for this grant, so she works with the internal coaches and helps them to with their ECAS3 scores and professional development. And she provides professional development and one-on-one debriefs with coaches. So you can see here their overall, if you want to go to the next one, because we don't really have time.
Is that their baseline effort score?
That's their average, like their baseline. So yes, so over here, their overall score is 3.62, and then language and literacy and interactions. That's their subscale that private providers have to meet. They have to at least get a 4.
Oh, right.
And then that's not applicable for the LEAs because the expectation is a 3. So thank you for reminding me. So it should be a 3.67 for private, with a 4 on language and literacy and interaction,
Okay.
And a 3 for LEAs. Okay, and this is just an extension of how many number of kids that we have, and then that gives us that they're meeting at least the 25% of eligible kids. And then this is the IDEA, it's just really to show that that we do have these inclusive classrooms and that we're having conversations around the importance of inclusion within the classrooms. And then Janice, we had a chat last time about really looking into the chronic absenteeism of the students and eligible students. So I think next time I can give a more in-depth report on that. But, you know, the overall was really just like when I had them report back, it was sick, either the child or parents, which was really high percentage. Vacations, there was a high percentage of just no-shows. And then we had a small percentage of lack of transportation as well. But I'll give a more in-depth report on that next time.
And is there
So this is just the overview, and you might just want to go over the overview because you have it in your folders and it breaks them down by location. So you can just see really here the number of sites, number of grantees, sites and classrooms, number of students enrolled in comparison to eligible students, which is in the green at the end. And the three blue columns before the green just breaks it down by economically disadvantaged kids with at least one risk factor, English learner kids, and then number of economically disadvantaged English learner students, because we thought that would be an interesting data to track to see you know, how many kids we have and how many eligible kids we're meeting in the breakdown of that. The number of eligible students that have been approved by the School Readiness Board was 2,448. So just know that this number of eligible students fluctuates by month. So we are, when they invoice each month, we're collecting those numbers, and it moves up and down depending on students and students leaving. And we know that there are some kids that leave, and they do have replacements for those kids. Many of our programs have eligible kids that they haven't been able to put on the list because they were given a maximum amount of kids, eligible kids, that they were allowed to invoice for. So just know that this fluctuates, and so this is the most recent update, but next month it could be, you know, we could be right up there at the 2,448.
Thank you, Emma. Any questions for Emma? Okay, no questions. She also covered the 2021 grant application cycle, so that we covered that agenda item. In terms of other business, our last item on the agenda, the next meeting is Tuesday, May 19th. And at that meeting, we'll consider the recommendations from staff on programs to fund for the upcoming school year. You also should know that meetings have been scheduled for September and November, and those dates are picked to correspond with key updates and decisions. So it's really important that we try to maintain those dates so that, as you can see, there's lots of decisions that need to be made, and if the timing doesn't work for the program to move forward, we run into trouble. So any further comments or questions from the board before I entertain a motion to adjourn? Seeing none, I'll motion to adjourn.
I second it.
You made it, and you seconded it? Okay. It's non-debatable. 3 o'clock. Yep, heading up there. We're done cleaning up.
I have to see her on Thursday at my meeting with her.
Hey, committee members, can you sign this, please, before you leave? If you have not signed the sign-in sheet, and leave your binders, Amy, did you take your binders?